This week's episode of The Unwind is brought to you by Green Man Gaming. You can get 20% off the latest games by going to thecommentist.com and clicking on the banner.
I assume you guys are going to watch Super Bowl in my place.
I guess.
Nah, I don't really feel the need not to watch you. The Super Bowl.
Oh. I don't want to watch it either.
Fine. I guess I'm not.
You're welcome to come.
Nope. No, please.
What up, nerds? Welcome to episode 67 of The Unwind, a weekly show where we talk about tech, games, gadgets, and geek culture. My name is Rob Steller.
I'm Sean Thomas.
And I'm Josiah Hills.
Have you been playing Undertale at all, Rob? Or Josiah, I just happened to ask
a random game you happen to pick out of the air.
Yeah, actually.
I played the intro to it, I think like the first half hour, 45 minutes. I got to the...
Oh, you really like the CGI cutscenes in the beginning?
What is it, the horse lady or something? I don't know.
Yo,
Zebra
yeah.
Zebra lady? I don't know. I forget what she is.
What's her name?
Anyway, I got to her house.
Well, I started playing it because a lot of people were hyping it up.
I didn't kill anybody yet.
It's a pretty good game. Yes, you can go, and I will stress this. This isn't really a secret. You can go the whole game without killing them.
Yeah.
There's somebody, it's like L'Oreal. Isn't that her name?
Something like that.
There are a few people, at least as far as I've played, that you think you can't kill. But anyway, that game is genuinely funny. There are not many games that I find
moments,
funny. And it's all text. It's not, they don't have any voice.
It's like Pokemon
acting.
Style. Like old school Pokemon style, like the way you walk around and stuff.
Oh, I mean, it's 8-bit. I think it's just trying to imitate that.
Sure.
So Pokemon style.
That's what I thought of. The battle and stuff. I guess like Final Fantasy, same. Like you have
walk
the menu.
Through tall grass or something.
Yeah,
you can sort of.
And you have like the menu.
Well, no, the fighting system is actually really different. I don't know. They did a lot of clever things in that game, so you should definitely.
I don't actually like the fighting system, like where you have to dodge stuff in the little box.
Well,
after you do
they go crazy. I can't beat the part I'm at, and I'm only halfway through the game, not even, and it gets much tougher and much more complicated. I don't know, I think it's clever, but
it's
anyway
good. It's good.
Yeah, I'm really liking it, and the music's actually really good too. They do a mix of chiptune and actual music, like this.
Do like me some chiptune.
So you're gonna have to play the rest of it so we can do a review. Ooh. In our review section.
Are we gonna put out a review, what do you call it, standard or whatever rating system? Scale?
No.
Is this the year 2016?
There's gonna be one happening. Score and we just give whatever we want. That's the whole scoring system.
It's 67.
Yeah.
Out of what? Oh, you know.
It's 67.
Another number.
Yeah, no units.
Yeah, no, that's how it works.
Point,
three check marks.
Point three, three repeating, of course.
So, Sean, when you got Undertale, how did you get it? Did you
go to a store?
Did you go to a store and buy it?
You have a job.
I did not. I was at a physical location, and I asked them, hey, where's Undertale? And they say, I'm sorry, sir, I don't know what you're talking about. Maybe you should check the internet.
So you bought it
on Steam?
Yes.
Allegedly.
For shame, man. You have a job.
I'll buy it.
This is
a good enough
game. It's
like
one person who made the game.
I'm kidding. I'll buy it. So so if there's 15 developers slaving away
No,
a game,
I'm
they don't
saying
deserve it,
it's
huh?
a small group.
One person is a very small group. It's because it's not a group at all.
Oh,
I didn't actually
really?
Bring that up to try to shame.
Don't turn this around, Sean.
I wasn't trying to shame you, Sean. I was trying to lead into
well,
the next topic.
I was
like
doing.
Because the next topic is about digital downloads and games. So some new industry information came out, and they're saying that digital downloads is about a $61 billion industry. Digital download games,
yep.
Specifically. And surprisingly, PC is on top.
Yeah.
Hold on. Do they have any predictions about the potentially addressable market? Do they also add in all the other 5-6 billion people who never play digital games? The market is actually the size of 4 trillion, but we've only addressed this portion so far.
I suppose it has room for growth, but there's not quite 4 trillion people on the planet yet. We're far short of that. But
I talked
the government doesn't want you to know.
I think I'd run into a few more of them. But you break it down, the 61 billion, they've got about 4 billion on consoles, which is by far the smallest.
Makes sense.
Makes sense, cuz you still still very used to, you know, people buying discs and handing that out as presents and stuff like that from parents and and family, whatever.
Wait, do you guys think it makes sense because it's that small, that big?
No, no, no. I think it makes sense because
it's the smallest of the three. So console, mobile, and PC. So
because console games you tend to buy physical copies of still. Whereas like if I'm going to buy a computer game, I don't go to the store to buy it.
Most games skip the physical release. It's crazy. Like Undertale.
That's what I'm saying. A lot of games you just
I think part of that, I mean, so Steam and you know, some of the follow-ups to Steam, like Good Old Games and stuff like that, have really made themselves...
Green Man Gaming, just
like Green Man Gaming. Even Amazon still does some digital downloads, too, I think.
That's right.
But, Origin, you know, they've come up with a strong offering. And then also the flip side of that is that a lot of times you can't get PC games in... they just don't stock them on the shelves.
Yeah.
In a lot of these stores anymore. It's
and that's even decent-sized games. Like Dragon's Dogma just came out, and as far as I know, it's a digital-only release for PC. I mean, granted, this wasn't the initial release, but yeah, that's a decent-sized game.
Most indies are going to be non-physical, too. Yeah.
So most of those console downloads, you know, it's coming from Xbox Arcade or, and more recently, Sony, because I don't think they didn't have a great digital download system on PS3.
Microsoft definitely pioneered that.
So that's $4 billion. Mobile, very healthy, $25 billion. So you're talking about a lot of these kind of free to play games,
your Marvel Puzzle
and microtransactions.
Just how much of that do you count for in Marvel Puzzle Quest?
I'm about 70% of Marvel. You know, a lot of Candy Crush and stuff like that.
A lot of Candy Crush.
So people buying whatever, energy pills or something. However it works in these games where you got to basically, you get to play for an hour and then you have to pay to recharge your meter. That's the basic basic game mechanic, but PC is coming in at $32 billion to round off that $61 billion number.
People saying PC gaming is dead? Nope. Not the case.
Do they have a breakdown at all?
Yeah. So let's see. So MOBAs? A big chunk of that. Yeah, a big chunk of
$30 billion.
A big chunk of that obviously is going to be MOBAs with the kind of you know, that free to play model. So you're doing microtransactions, that sort of thing. So depending on which MOBA you're playing, a lot of that is just cosmetic, and some of it is level up faster. But it's not. I wouldn't say it's quite pay to win.
I'd be curious to see how much, I know this is probably not there, but how much of that money is just cosmetic things, like not games, not actually like DLC, no levels, like anything like that.
I would think a lot, because I would think the majority of this revenue is coming from League of Legends, Dota. I mean, and I there are a lot of games, because they don't want to get the negative press, they specifically make all their items cosmetic. Even is it Pillars of Eternity? Which one was the one that was isometric and kind of felt like Diablo 2?
Yeah, Pillars.
They, as far as I know, they made it all cosmetic. And it's just they want to keep that backlash. So I could imagine a lot of it is not pay-to-win stuff.
Yeah, so League of Legends, they're saying that came in at $1.6 billion. Crossfire, I've never heard
Crossfire.
Of Crossfire.
Smile, might be an Eastern game.
I want to get caught up in it.
Dungeon Crossfire. Fighter Online. World of Warcraft is...
World of Warcraft.
World of Warcraft.
The DuckTales version.
Wait. Say the ones before that.
Dungeon Fighter Online. I don't know.
A lot of these are Asian.
Yeah,
don't
these are
come
Asian
here.
Games.
Yeah. So those top three are over $1 billion. World of Warcraft.
Nice.
I said it, yeah. comes in at $800 million. $814 million. And then... and then World of Tanks comes in at half that much.
Dota's not on the top five?
Dota's $238 million.
Wow.
Number eight. It
shows the difference between League and Dota.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. Which always amazes me because, you know, Dota has the international and the amount of prize money is through the roof.
Yeah, it's just...
But definitely League is much more revenue driving.
But so, Rob, one thing you pointed out earlier, you know, they say PC gaming
is
dying.
Was it a good point?
well, I'm going to make a good point. no, but so, you know, you mentioned that a lot of people complain about PC gaming dying, and this is, you know, counter to that. But really, you have to look at what it is. PC still does not do well in, quote, I guess, traditional games. It's these specific games, these MMOs, free-to-play games that do really well. Because
yeah.
A good example is there, and this isn't always like this, but typically regular games that are also on consoles sell better on consoles.
Sure.
Like GTA 5 did well on PC, but it still was eclipsed by, like...
Yeah, I mean, that also came out, what, 2 years earlier but, on consoles?
So there are other things, like, and now we don't
like
know
The Witcher.
This, but we
The
can
Witcher
be
probably
confident.
Sold much better on console than PC.
Yeah, that would be a good example of another one where, yeah, they probably sold a
or
lot
Fallout,
better on
Fallout.
All of those games. And in addition to, so Batman Arkham Knight came out and it had tons of bugs for PC. And honestly, people always complain how they're not supporting PC. It's a money thing. I mean, if they could make more money off the PC, they would. It's not like they want to avoid this market. It's just that they can sell an Arkham Knight game better on a PS4 or Xbox One. I mean, they've gotten to the point where they literally just, it was too buggy and they just decided we're not going to fix it anymore. The community can try and fix it. And I feel like for a console game, they wouldn't do that. They would put more care into it because they're selling better numbers and they need to make sure it's a decent game.
Yeah.
And as dumb as it sounds, I wonder how return policy factors in, because Steam did introduce a return policy to some degree, but for a while you couldn't return digital games, whereas
right.
physical games you can totally return.
Yeah.
But either way, my point is PC gaming in a way is dying in terms of AAA releases that are, quote, traditional games. Indie scene, though, I mean, it's blowing up on the PC, and that's basically where so much of the innovation comes
from. So this
is
interesting. So this is just one article. So The Witcher 3, right? 70% of the game sales were on console versus 30% on PC.
Wow.
And 75% of the PC versions were physical copies.
Huh.
Which were probably a lot of, what are they called, like... special editions and stuff like that.
Oh yeah.
Well, so that's interesting.
That's really shocking to me, though.
Yeah.
I mean, good old games is owned by CD Projekt.
Yeah.
Red.
Well, so that's why it's interesting. Also, is because CD Projekt Red, I think, only made PC games before this, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Witcher.
At least the Witcher games.
Well, they always
originally.
With
right. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
I don't think the Witcher 1 ever came to consoles. Witcher 2 did.
Oh, that's
but
right.
But later,
right.
if I remember
yeah,
correctly.
Yeah, much later. And so this was their first dual launch.
Yeah.
But it's interesting, too. If it is 30%, I mean, you could argue that maybe it's 33% Xbox, 33% PS4, and then 30% PC, right? Which is crazy to me. That would be also though.
I think PS4 had a little bit more. It wasn't 50-50.
That's plausible.
But,
that's plausible. Yeah. But clearly, it's close enough to being equal to a console, which
right.
actually that goes counter to all the points. I just
so let me ask this: Counter-Strike, Global Offensive, and Grand Theft Auto. Do either of those have microtransactions?
GTA does now.
Yeah,
they added it. I think they added it later on, but you could buy in-game money for real dollars.
Okay,
I would think CS:GO does.
Probably,
it
right?
would make sense.
I feel like,
yeah,
that's the model. It's almost like Team Fortress.
Yeah,
yeah, it is.
Okay, because those are the only two games that you could actually get on CD.
You can get that on CD. Wow.
Well, sorry. I guess technically you can buy a World of Warcraft CD, but
I still have my StarCraft CD.
So those are the. Those are the Chess only
quest.
Three. So World of Warcraft at number 4, Counter-Strike at number 9, and Grand Theft Auto at number 10 are the only games on that PC list that you can actually buy physical media for.
You know why? It's because they don't have any breakfast-based RPGs anymore.
Yes.
But,
first
I mean,
person shooters,
well, so just to contrast that to the console where every single one of those downloads obviously
sure.
can be purchased on
yeah.
physical media.
Sure. And those are also weird examples too, because obviously League of Legends is all online, so there's no point in a physical copy. And in addition, these games like CS:GO, if you play the game online, whatever CD you bought is useless. You can't resell it. Just
sure.
like Diablo, because once you use the key, it's used up. It's
right.
attached to your
sure.
account.
But so I guess my point is when you look at the top grossing games for PC and mobile, so they're using these kinds of microtransactions,
yep.
that type of thing. You're bringing in, 1.6, $1.3 billion a year, roughly,
yeah.
right?
Right?
You can basically say it's going to, if not grow, be close to the same. You know, some of these games, especially on mobile, they end up turning out to be a little bit of a fad, right? So they'll kind of fade out
yeah.
a little bit.
Yeah.
But but League has been up there for a long, long time.
Look at Warcraft, World of Warcraft. Yeah. World, what, 15 years, yeah, or something like that?
I don't think that old. I don't think it came out in 2000, but it's very old, at least 10 years old, without a doubt.
So, you know, it's been bringing in crazy revenue for many, many years, and yeah, they have to update it, and they have to add new characters and stuff like that, but it's not the same as building up a new game engine from scratch and building all these storyline content and being in production for 4 years.
Yeah.
And then releasing your game and hoping that it does well. That,
yeah.
So just to start wrapping this up, you know, saw this other article about two games in particular. What was it? Evolve and Rainbow Six Siege, right? And so these are two games that were kind of traditional type games, but they totally tanked. They were just...
They were also both highly hyped before they came out.
Yeah,
true. And I've read reviews and...
Evolve, definitely.
They have pretty decent game mechanics. Like, they can be a lot of fun to play. But Evolve, Sean, you were saying on Steam, how many concurrent players?
Yeah, apparently there are 300 recently.
That can't be possible. Like, that's...
I don't know how it's
possible. How do you even find a match?
Well, and I think part of that is, though, since it's a multiplayer game, as the number dwindles, it becomes, like... It dwindles even quicker than a single player game because nobody can find a game
right,
to play with.
Yeah, you can... Like, right now is the time to get our team together.
I was just going to say, we're going to be the best Evolve players ever.
But you know the last 300 people are the people who have played Evolve all day, every day, and they're just... They're on the Evolve forum saying, oh, the 1.5 release is terrible. I'm quitting now. And then... 5 years later,
but one of the reasons the hypothesis
Steve was the monster of that game. they know all of their names.
The hypothesis behind why those two games did very poorly is right out of the gate, they embraced some of these microtransaction style business models. So I guess Evolve was a little different in that they announced a ton of DLC before the game even came out.
It was ridiculous.
And so people were like, well, why am I paying $60 for a half-baked game? Just put all the DLC in there. And, you know, you could take the flip side of that and say, well, they just were really confident about their game and they wanted to go ahead and, while they had the development teams together, make a lot of extra content for it. But they
It's a shame.
You know,
that
game,
it's actually pretty fun. Like, did you play the beta?
You guys played
we
the
did.
Beta.
Or there was
yeah,
like an open access weekend. I remember when before it came out, when we were at PAX, like, that was the game. Like, that was the game that people waited all day to play that year.
Yeah.
And I remember going to that booth, and they had a massive booth for that game.
That's one of, I feel like, one of the biggest failures I've seen in a while in terms, like, that game just died really quickly. But but it's funny. I mean, part of the reason why they went that microtransaction route is all these numbers. I mean, this encourages this. People complain about microtransactions all day, but when you have these companies making this much money, it's hard not to think, hey, maybe we could introduce a $100.
Don't release it as a $60 game.
Yeah.
Now.
Yeah. I think, I
like,
think
Evolve, and
by
especially
the way, I'm
given
not a
that,
fan of
no,
it.
No, no, no.
But I know.
But I think if they had launched Evolve as a $20 game or something like that with add ons or even a free like now this is the time they go free to play. Like,
just
let it, you know, go free to play and then have, you know, transactions to get whatever. But
similar with Rainbow Six, I think. And, you know, so last week we were talking about what's the value of a game that you can, you know, based on time and using that metric of like 2 hours, what's that worth versus 60 hours or 100 hours of gameplay versus some of these free to play models that, you know, if you like the game and you've got a crew playing it with you, it's near infinite. Hours of playtime.
Right.
Yeah.
And yet people are balking at paying $60 and then doing microtransactions. So I think it's just weird. It's interesting. I'm not saying it's right to charge people $60 and then ask for more money or put these like addictive game mechanics in there trying to get more money. But it's just interesting to take a look at how much perception can hamper a good game otherwise.
You know what's funny too, do you ever think maybe say 10 20 years back that somebody would say, you know what, in 20 years time, or let's go 10 15 years back, whenever Shenmue came out, it had the biggest budget in history, right? It was like $70 million. To think that there will be a game at some point that they probably have development costs on the level of Shenmue and it's free to play. Players do not have to pay a dime to play the game. I mean, it's crazy because these free-to-play games are full of content, full of development resources dedicated to them. I mean,
yeah, I'm not saying it's easy, but when you look at something like League, I mean, the intensity of development is far less than you get your servers figured out, which is probably the most complex and most expensive part of it. It's like, okay, we're going to release a new character every month, every 2 months, and it's very formulaic because you've built out the mechanics of the game, and you can't do too much because it starts to break the balance. So, you know, it's kind of self-reinforcing, but
I think one thing they did importantly, which is the difficult part, is less the servers and stuff, figuring out how to curate your community and keep them interested, and like you said, balance all of those things.
Yeah, I will say Riot did a good job of that, managing their community.
And people have always said that that's one thing they like. So, I mean, piggybacking on, you know, keeping connection to your community. So Microsoft not too long ago bought Minecraft. And one thing that, I mean, Microsoft immediately realized, or anybody who knows anything about Minecraft knows, that there's a huge following of Minecraft kids, or kids playing Minecraft, meaning a really young audience. So they decided to go with this and go for, Minecraft Education, if I'm correct? I think, Minecraft Education Edition.
Yep.
So they bought up Minecraft.edu,
which was started, if I remember correctly, by a group of teachers. I think it was a couple teachers.
They started
a website so that you could host
independent schools, and they were using Minecraft heavily in the
independent schools.
Wow.
I think it started out as more of just like a place to put lesson plans for Minecraft and things like that, and it kind of grew out. It's crazy.
You take all your tests on Minecraft.
Well, it's crazy that this, I guess, were they a company? I guess they were, right?
Yeah, they were a company.
Mojang.
Yeah. No, Minecraft EDU.
Oh, I was like,
Minecraft is its own entity. It just exists. No, Minecraft EDU was a company.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't know that. Well, either way, so they've done a couple things. I believe the way the Minecraft Edition works, you can pay $5 per student, and you can work it in your schools. Microsoft is helping. They actually made a bunch of levels where you can explore, I guess, real-life areas. Like, they recreated the Pyramids of Giza, Greek temples, Pompeii, different things like that.
In block form?
Block form.
Yeah.
And so it's really interesting, and clearly, I mean, it seems like a decent move on their part, but there's always this question in my mind, how educational is Minecraft really? I mean, it reminds me of Legos and things like that, where it's clearly, it's not like a first person shooter where there's no educational element to it, but is it really that useful? And do you guys think, I mean, just stepping aside from whether or not this is a good move for Microsoft, do you think this is a good move for schools? Do you think it makes sense?
So it kind of goes to it. And I'll say this with a caveat that I don't play Minecraft, so I can't fully speak to.
By the way, I actually kind of want to play Minecraft.
Do you?
I don't think I would ever get addicted, but I kind of want to try.
And I've like walked around in the world for a few minutes, and I was like, it's blocks, and I'm hitting blocks, and
you just don't get it, man.
I'm not like a creation person in games, so I don't know. But so there's a couple things with this. So that with that said, that I don't play it, I think there's definitely like lesson plans, right? This is not replacing a curriculum for a class, right? You're not going in like, oh, well, now we're teaching science in Minecraft. Like,
you grow up just thinking, I put two pieces of wood together and you get a pickaxe. That's how
it works, right? So it's
we're training a generation of miners. They all only know how to mine things.
I think it's a smart move for schools. I mean, it's relatively cheap as far as software goes. $5.
$5 a kid. Yeah,
it's not that bad. It does add up.
Is it per year?
Is it?
I actually don't
per
know.
Per month?
It's probably
it just
year.
Says $5 per student.
So
I assume it's not.
I will
month,
say
but.
it's the good thing that it's doing is, and this is Josiah and I's job, right? Is finding ways to meet kids where they're at with technology and with games, and trying to build learning experiences around.
Josiah
that.
And Rob actually dress up as teenagers. What up, youngins?
How goes 21 Jump Street?
Hey, dog.
Just hang out in the high schools. Josiah still looks younger than me, though.
No.
It's the Asian. Anyway, so I think it's smart for schools to want to meet kids where they're at and try to, you know, help them learn in platforms that they're already spending time for, leisure time in, right? So connecting experiences where they're spending 3-4 hours a day going at home and playing this game and figuring out how to integrate that into learning, I think is a smart idea. That said, I haven't seen the actual lessons. Like, the only things I've seen is, like, you can go inside an eyeball that's made of blocks and see the anatomy of it, which I honestly don't really know how useful that is. Like, I guess it's, you can, like, kind of magic school bus it a little bit, but you know, so I don't think it's by any means should replace an entire curriculum, but I think that a lot of the social elements are there, because I know, like, World of Warcraft was also brought into schools for
social
from something. So, you know, I think there are elements there that you can take in and incorporate into classes. Like, Portal was another good example of teaching physics, where you
game
can, like,
physics,
you can do lessons in that to explain, you know,
Max
an
Payne
idea.
Has bullet physics.
Yeah.
Oh, and quick thing, I should just say, it's $5 per user per year, but they haven't particularly nailed down. They said this is their plan, so they're still rolling out pricing. But sorry, keep going.
And that's for what is it, hosting, or is it
like,
because if you buy the game, you don't need to pay jack shit. So it must be hosting.
But
right?
The game's more than $5, no?
I think. We really don't know anything about Minecraft,
yeah, but if,
folks.
If you buy the game and host, like, so if I just put it on each machine, I don't need to pay per kid.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Right? So I pay per machine. That's the normal
right,
license.
Yeah. That's what I assume.
And then
yeah.
I host it myself.
Right.
And it's free after that. So what is the $5
unless
get
you can log in as a student, push lessons to students,
yeah,
things like that?
That's what I'm wondering.
Right.
Right. So, but I mean, so there's this you know, measured effect of just novelty in education, right? So you bring something new into the classroom and kids are going to have a short-term gain in learning and retention, right? It's just, you just bring anything new in there. Like, hey, today we're going to learn with jumping jacks and people will learn better than they did previously. And then you'll see a spike and it will drop precipitously unless you do something else, or that is a truly good way and effective way of teaching, right? So definitely when you say, hey, we're going to use a video game that you've been playing the last 8 hours every day, or, you know, the last day every 8 hours, I can't say it. 8 hours
every day.
You've
been playing a shit ton of time in that game.
You've been playing so much, I've forgotten how to speak. But, you know, so, yeah, if you tell kids, yeah, we're going to learn history through this game, then they'll definitely be excited and they'll be engaged for a little bit. And unless it's truly valuable in an educational sense, you will see a drop. And I've not seen good research specifically on Minecraft, on the Minecraft effect, so to speak. Like, what's it look like for schools that have done this for 3 years now across the grade levels? Are kids actually still engaged in that? In that way. And so when you talk about the types of lessons, you know, Rob mentioned basically social elements. So you effectively have avatars that let you, you know, interact with people in a slightly...
All the nerds beat up the bullies because they know how to play the game better.
All those axes.
Well, no, I mean, I've seen interesting lesson plans, right? So like where you modify social interactions or you temper social interactions with problem solving. Right, so you give the students a challenge and say, okay, this is the world I've built for you on this server. These are the resources. I need you to recreate this thing or make this thing, right? And then you deal with problems as they pop up. You have, like, sometimes I've heard of teachers sharing stories about, like, well, kids were vandalizing each other's stuff, and then they had to have a talk about what's good and what's bad. And for the most part, you know, we're talking about third grade, fourth grade kids. Like, having interactions and saying, oh, well, yeah, I guess we should make rules where we don't throw rocks at each other's houses and shit like that, right? So, great, brilliant.
Why does this character keep crouching on the other one's faces? I don't know what they're doing.
But did you have to use Minecraft to do that? Probably not. You can teach kids how to be not assholes to each other without Minecraft,
but,
you know?
But that's the best part about kids.
So do you think this has the potential? I feel like for whatever reason, Minecraft is being seen as something else. Like, I think all of us, like, when computers started coming out, we played some games on computers in school. We've all played. Now, the games, the educational games that I played were far more straightforward, like Word Muncher. It's literally you're trying to find out words, and then so there's a gameplay element, but it's extremely fairly straightforward how they're teaching you. My question to you is, do you think there's an element of this that could you make a class out of this? Like, is this big enough to do something different other than just, hey, every, it's like having the movie day in school where you just learn, like you're saying.
Okay, so, I mean, the common analogy is that Minecraft is like digital Legos, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'd say that's fairly accurate. You get some benefit because it's digital, and with you zombies. Lose some stuff because it's digital. So, you know, it's the same thing as me saying, okay, well, I can build a simulated version of things in Minecraft. Well, we could do that with Legos,
yeah.
Right? And so do I go out and buy a Lego model of the pyramids of Giza? Or do I take them to it in Minecraft? It doesn't matter.
Well, but scale is very different because you can
build stuff to scale
in Legos.
How? Yes, you have a Lego person representing. I'm not saying life size. So I'm saying scale.
I mean, in the other way that you could make it. So it's hard to understand scale.
There are advantages, but zooming out really big and then zooming in really small on a computer doesn't necessarily help kids with their real world spatial mapping. There's actual research on that, right? So physical things help young kids understand their physical world. So, you know, I'm not saying strongly for or against it. I'm just saying things are different, and there's this analogy of building blocks, right? As far as the simulations with social interactions, same thing. I could give every kid a little doll and say, you're talking through this doll. Guess who do that? Psychologists do that all the time when they're dealing with kids who've experienced trauma. They give them dolls and say, talk to the doll or have the doll talk for you. Right? So it's a known thing. It's just a novelty factor. Where I think Minecraft really, really excels and can be something very special is the same thing, again, if we take it back to Legos. Legos Minecraft, Mindstorm, right? Where you can start to do computing and robotics with these Legos, these special Legos, and have these Legos do problem solving that you are controlling through a computing console. A very simple programming console. Well, with Redstone in Minecraft, you can do similar things, right? And so when kids actually take it a step beyond, oh, well, I've made this 3D model of a pile of stones or whatever, that's interesting. It can be artistic. It can be inspiring. But what's the problem-solving component behind that? If they now make calculators, I've seen people in Minecraft make these real life calculators.
I think they made a phone.
Make even you what could say roller coasters, phone. Right? Like a roller coaster, but you know, there's physics behind that, and you have to have the highest hill at the top, and blah blah blah, right? So if you actually do real problem solving in Minecraft, that's where it's really powerful and can be an interesting model that has, I think, true impact in education. But beyond that, it's just a swap for other existing models of teaching.
Yeah.
Well, one funny thing is, so you know, obviously this is very accessible to the students, but the interesting thing, if you want to build a lesson plan, I assume Microsoft is making these tools. They have said they are. But the teacher has to know how to build in Minecraft as well, because they have to know
how
to...
Well, that's part of what Minecraft EDU was all about, was that they had online lessons. So, you know, Here's the Pyramid of Giza lesson, and this is what I do in this simulation, and it's up to the teacher to say that, yeah, this is valuable and whatever, and it's presumably, you know, it's tagged for subject area, grade level, et cetera.
It's an excuse for teachers who play Minecraft.
Yeah.
In the classroom. Let's be real.
But so the final question I want to ask, you know, Josiah, you're a former teacher, Rob, you work in education. Do you see any immediate reason, would you, if you were teaching a science class or maybe even a math class, would you use Minecraft? Would you ask to...
This would not be a priority for me. You know, I might fool around with it over a summer and say, okay, I can do one or two lessons with it. If I already had an infrastructure at school, like I would not go through all my my political contacts within the school system to get computers and all this stuff. Like, unless I already had a computer lab and the, you know, the IT staff had already approved it and blah blah
blah,
and
it was easy just to easy. Get through.
Like, then, this is not something that I would rest my reputation on and fight for to get in front of my kids. It's not that valuable.
Yeah, I don't know. I, you know, again, I wasn't a teacher, but I'd have to see more of it. to have a better opinion of whether or not it'd be useful. I think it'd be cool for like clubs and things like that at this point, like after school, to, you know, do like some kind of
club.
yeah exactly, like
you have you're going to the club.
you have Minecraft clubs, so then you can do some structured act, so it's not just here play a bunch of video games,
and you give each other challenges,
structured activities around it. That's kind of where I'm at with that.
So it'll be interesting. I guess we'll see in the future. They're still rolling a lot of it out, and that company that originally owned Minecraft Edu is Teacher Gaming. So that's interesting. I wonder what other kind of stuff they're doing, but I don't know.
They're in the bank now. Yeah. They quit teaching.
Yeah, seriously. So I guess we'll see how it goes in the future.
Cool. So let's move on to the change up, which is brought to you by Green Man Gaming. You can get 20% off the latest games by going to the Commentist website and clicking on the banner. So last week we talked about playing, whether or not you would play a game. This week I want to pose the same question. Will you play it? Game came out, I think this week, called The Witness. Which
January
is
26th.
Jonathan Blow's new game.
Jonathan Blow's.
You know what? He got enough of that as a kid. No need to bully him.
Hey,
now.
He's the one who blows, man.
He made Braid, which was critically acclaimed, and this is the follow-up to that, which is a puzzle game. It has hundreds of hours of line puzzles.
Like, really?
Line puzzles.
Yeah.
The reviews came out. It's gotten very, very high score. I think Metacritic's in the 80s right now.
Like high 80s.
High 80s, yeah. Some have given it perfect scores, some review sites. So,
boo.
So will you play it?
It's perfect, just so.
I think it's $40.
So
$40?
$40.
Yep. Are you shitting me?
I mean, hey, it's
100
hours
of puzzles.
Okay.
It's like a fucking phone book size version of Sudoku puzzles, right? It's like,
you wouldn't pay for hundreds of hours of Sudoku.
I wouldn't pay $40 for Sudoku puzzles.
So it's $89 right now, which is really high.
$89?
That's bullshit. I don't know.
It's the collector's edition. It comes with line puzzles on the box.
I'm not buying it.
In order to play it and open the box, you have to complete a line puzzle. So Josiah says no.
No, and I mean, I might
but
eventually.
There are reviews, Josiah.
Yeah, but I don't trust those reviews, right? Like,
Jonathan Blow paid him off.
I mean, you know, the whole Gamersgate
got
sparked because I'm gonna so Gamersgate
it's a line puzzle game. Calm down.
No, that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. Gamersgate got sparked off because of this accusation of, you know, kind of payola for games reviews and all this stuff.
Yeah.
And it just so happened that, you know, the creator of this game that was accused of having inflated reviews was a woman, right? Mm. I'm calling bullshit on this, right? Because the games company, the game reviews do this all the time. There's this one quirky game of a game mechanic or game style that they haven't seen in a while.
Line puzzles.
It looks pretty, and it's been put out by somebody that they already know, and it's like, oh, this is amazing, and blah, blah, blah. Bullshit, right? In the next 2 years, we're going to have any number of line puzzle games, and they're all going to suck as much as The Witness. Not saying The Witness is shit, but it's not a 10, right? It's
How
so...
You know, you haven't played it.
You haven't even watched the trailer.
You can't say that.
You don't know anything about
the game. You haven't even seen a video.
Well, we have him on record when he loves this game.
But here's the point where we go back to...
Once it comes out on iOS, it's his new Marvel Puzzle Quest.
Here's my point. We go back to the rating systems that are flawed, right? So... How can you have a perfect 10? That means it's the...
line puzzles are so fucking good.
It's the best line puzzle game ever? Great. I'm not interested in line puzzle games. Is it the best game ever that transcends? Like, if I put this down in front of a first-person shooter
What line puzzle game do you know that's better than The Witness, huh? What game do you know? Clearly, you don't know
any
better line
puzzle game.
That's
what I'm saying. It's a bullshit rank. It's bullshit ratings to give this a perfect 10. It's so stupid. I'm not saying it's a bad game. It might be a lot of fun.
Okay, so Josiah's not playing the game.
So stupid.
Yeah, I agree.
Wait till it comes out on iOS. Wait till it comes out on iOS. I guarantee you.
I saw that 10 out of 10 review for Marvel Puzzle Quest. I knew they were paid off from the beginning. Yeah. I said it was BS. I'm going to reserve judgment until I actually play it. I think I will eventually play it, but it's not going to be... It's probably not going to be soon, because I still feel like I'm very confused. I think we're in the same boat, Rob, where it's... I just don't understand how I could play line puzzles for that long, and it keep me engaged and feel like even a 9, like a very highly rated game. I guess I don't understand.
So there's a game, Talos Principle, that came out recently that was also puzzle based. Like, it was a first person, you're going around and exploring a world and solving puzzles. There's another game. Oh, I can't remember. I beat it on in a day. It's like a short indie game that was similar. Yeah, you know. But short, similar, like puzzle type game. It was not hundreds of hours, and it was not line puzzles. So this is where I'm confused. So I haven't seen enough of it, and the part of me doesn't want to watch too much of it because if I do end up playing it,
it is all line puzzles.
So that's what it is. Like, can it really be only one type of puzzle in the entire game?
I mean, how could that be so good? But obviously, it is still the same type.
I don't want to fucking solve line puzzles for that long. Like, this. So this is a game that I will pick up in a year when it's free on PlayStation. What do they call it? Not Games of Gold. It's Xbox.
PlayStation Now game. No, PlayStation Plus game.
Plus, yeah. So when it's on PlayStation Plus for the free, you know, in February, March next year.
Well, assuming
I'll pick it up. I'll play it for. I'll play it for 5 hours. I'll get to a fucking line puzzle that I can't beat, and it's gonna piss me off.
And you'll be like tens.
That's what Rob says whenever he finds a
best game ever.
I'll try it. I want to try it because it's just like the hype thing. It's just like, I need to know why this is so goddamn good in people's eyes it's literally just line puzzles.
It's probably good.
But it got across the board. It got good reviews.
Because everybody is smoking crack.
Oh,
they're
my
all
God.
Smoking the same crack.
Oh, my God.
They're all smoking line puzzle crack. That's
what they're doing lines.
They're all doing Jonathan's blow.
They're doing lines of blow, yeah. Crazy.
All right, that was
take us home, Rob.
We have another topic.
No, literally, future homes. Take us.
Yes.
Home.
All right. So
ten.
What is the 10 of homes? Let's talk about this. No. So I get excited about things. I get excited about things. You guys know I have a tendency to impulsively buy things. It's what happens when you're single.
Did we already tell the anecdote about the Oculus Rift?
I'm sure I bought it.
Okay. Talked about
that
it several times now.
Very quickly, yes. So this project came to my attention called Air Banzai, which is literally just
a Kickstarter project.
It's a Kickstarter project.
A man in a trench coat approached me.
And he had a floating bonsai tree in his trench coat.
And I said, sir, I must have that.
He says, do you want to know about the future?
So anyway, this project out of Japan, literally, it's just a magnetic base, and then they have these little like floating bonsai trees or plants or anything. And I saw that, and I was like, that looks like what would be in the house of a future, and I must have that in my house. So I bought it, or I will be buying it, I guess, when it's out, or I'll back it and get it when it's out. So this got me to thinking, like, I really want. I like tech stuff.
How many things can float?
Yes. Oh no! I was telling Sean this yesterday. I was like, Sean, the next time you come to my house, you'll never touch the ground. You'll just float around the house.
Before you walk into his house, you'll have to walk into a magnetic suit so you can, because there's magnets all around the house. So you constantly just float around,
And bounce off the walls.
And then some asshole changes the polarity, and everybody gets stuck to the wall. And you're like, damn it. And somebody has the wrong suit and they fly out of the house.
It was like that Tony Hawk, he backed that board, remember? It was like the original hoverboard. It was just magnets.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Which was technically a real hoverboard.
Yeah. How do they
not
work,
this bullshit.
Sean?
I don't know.
Oh, insane clown posse. Anyway, so I was thinking about, you know, what other... So I live in an old house, right? And there's not, like, a ton you can do. Obviously, there's a big push recently has been home automation systems. So, like, the Nest, Hue light bulbs, things like that, where you can basically connect a lot of different things around your house to devices and control them from a phone or, you know, use Raspberry Pi or something like that to do all this automation stuff. You can get locks for your doors now that are either fingerprint or, you know, you just unlock with NFC or something like that. So,
or even like a smartphone enabled, right?
So
you can just give somebody a temporary code
and let them
and
in.
Unlock them.
So there's a lot of cool stuff going. And then we had the conversation. So I'm attempting to build the smart mirror. I think we talked about that on the show, right?
I'm not sure.
I think so.
But we talked about, you know what we talked about was at CES, they had that transparent TV.
Oh, yeah.
So it was just a piece of glass, and then it would come up. And, you know, there's a lot of push also from a lot of the home appliance makers to just put screens everywhere.
Yeah.
Which I'm a huge fan of. Like, I can't wait till my refrigerator tells me I need milk. Like, that's fantastic. Screen. No, so I basically want screens all over the place. Like,
do
I
really want to sleep on a screen?
I want the walls to just be, like, touch-enabled, and I can just do stuff on there. And, anyway. So the other thing, Josiah,
you get spyware and there's advertisements all over your house.
All these porn pop-ups show up around my house. Mom, don't look at the wall.
Your penis is too small. Your penis is too small.
Oh, God. This is not at all what I wanted to talk about. So and then the other big thing, too, is like a lot of VR and AR coming in, right? So you have the HoloLens, and I think there's another the Leap, right?
Magic Leap
is another augmented reality system. Yeah. So layering things on, you know, what's already there. So
you just have an empty house.
You just have an empty house.
Yeah. Look at all the furniture I have.
And
then these glasses on and see all the furniture.
The holodeck. Yeah. And then you have like VR now, which is supposedly going to be up and coming, which it's almost like a futuristic Ready Player One scenario where you can just live in like a little box and spend all of your time in VR. And speaking of it, so Josiah and I were looking at these space efficient housing options. So like basically it's, you know, these small little trailer houses or
300 square feet.
Everything kind of just collapses into itself. So like tables just fold out of the wall and like drawers are just slide out everywhere. But it's super space efficient, and if you
sleep folded up,
you start combining a lot of these things. And like if you had a HoloLens, for example, you don't really need a TV if it works the way it's supposed to, where you can just literally make a 55-inch TV appear in your vision, right?
Yeah.
So I want to talk a little bit about that. Like, what do you want to see? What are the trends that you think are gonna keep going? This is really just an open-ended way of me to talk about the bonsai tree. That's what I can't wait to get.
Well, definitely a bonsai tree in every corner of every
room. I think all plants should just float. I don't know why we need earth anymore. They just float around.
I definitely would like to, you know, we've been talking about I need to move closer to work. That probably won't happen in the next month or two, but hopefully within this calendar year. And when I do that, I definitely want to just downsize a lot. Like I'm literally trying to count up all the furniture that I will take. Basically, my bed, a nightstand, dresser drawer, and a desk, a kitchen table, and a sofa, mm-hmm. and that's it. Like, if I can't fit stuff in or on top of that furniture, then I don't really want it. So, all the books that I have, and some of the extra clothes or craft materials and stuff like that, just toss it. I don't really want
also
to
my apartment is now Josiah's storage, and slowly but surely everything that's been coming out of his apartment has ended up here.
I like the idea of open space, open clean space. And there's, I can't remember the name of the video, but when I took this gamification class, I ended up as an assignment I had to watch this video. It was on Vimeo, and it was interesting because the guy had a similar setup, right? He had basically an empty room other than the sofa. And the TV was, you know, on the wall, its wall mm-hmm. panels. And everybody had these, like, implants or contact lenses that were augmented reality.
So
you look at his wall, and it shows a shelf of all his life badges,
which is crazy because it's what HoloLens is doing. I think it was a contact or the video, right?
Yeah,
it was a contact lens contact that you put on.
Or maybe an implant or something, but so that's the idea, right? Because you used to have these bookshelves obviously to store your books, but also to spur conversation when people came over. Well, if I could have a virtual or augmented or mixed
reality. Look at all these books I read.
And you can share. Because, I mean, some people get worried about that. They're like, well, when you have a Kindle, how do you show people what you're reading lately? I'm like, well, I don't really give a shit about that. But, you know, that's one way to do it.
I listen to audiobooks, son.
You could have like a Matrix moment too, where all the guns fly in and that part. And so they have all these books coming. I've read all of these.
I'll keep the guns.
I think a lot of this is cool, but I think a couple things. First, we're talking about having minimal spaces and having some kind of VR or AR to represent what we have.
Even like the Gorilla Smart Glass videos that they always put out, the concept videos, Dave Glass, so they show like your windows are, you know, they have the tint that you can put down or the screens that you can put on.
Yeah.
all that stuff. So it's not necessarily just
well. So AR, two things with the first thing with that, what I was saying with the VR and AR, my problem is I think it'll have the same problem that 3D TVs had, is that everybody has to have 3D glasses. So in the same way, if people come over, everybody has to have a way of viewing what you're viewing. And a weird addition, so I recently got a cat, and you think about if you have pets, I mean, I don't actually know. I mean, they tend to live in the physical space.
Tamagotchis.
So, yeah, that's true. You can just have digital pets.
What are you saying? You need VR glasses for your cat?
I do. No, so I'm definitely the
tell your dog to go get the paper, but it's really just a digital paper.
Well, I can just imagine there's a situation where, you know, there's just, I think for the most part, I don't think we'll ever get to a point where it's full Wall-E, I don't think, where people feel like they completely get rid of physical objects. There is something about having a tactile object, and even in terms of having conversation and things like that, it's just easier when you have a couch to sit on or some way, a dining table, something to do, and like eating food and stuff, you need something.
Yeah, I mean, all of that was on my list, couch.
Yeah, that's true. But I'm just saying that moving towards a VR house, I think, would be difficult unless, we get to some future where, everybody has VR implanted in their brains, and then you could do it.
Can't wait.
But then, I like this idea of home automation. I mean, Internet of Things has been around for a long time. It's never, I don't think it's ever panned out as well as people want to, but considering how many more devices there are now and different ways you can connect. Actually, I was listening to a podcast with Walt Mossberg, and he was talking about how no smartwatch has really taken off. Even the Apple Watch hasn't done that well. And part of it is because nobody knows what it does. And one point he said was, and I like this idea that you could use a watch since it's always on you, even more than a phone sometimes, you could use it as a token. So you go up to your house, it recognizes who you are, and it can do various things.
They have that, right?
They have elements of that, but there's different apps that you have to have, and it's a little convoluted. But the aim of the watch, no one thought, hey, we're going to use this as your main interaction for your house or something like that.
Well, I mean, it's a matter of partnerships for Apple because they don't make all the other peripherals. But I don't know if this actually came to fruition, but either BMW, probably BMW because they've had a past history, but it's either BMW or Mercedes or Audi or something like that. And they were saying that you could eventually use the watch, the Apple Watch, to start your car.
And I think Hyundai already did that with Android.
And I think Starwood Hotels, like it's
you can check in with it.
Yeah, you can unlock your door with it. You know, that stuff is capable, and I think it's really interesting too. I would be interested in, you know, maybe testing some of it out, but I think the security is still really quite a mess.
There are a couple things with that. Well, first off, I mean, having an Internet of Things house is pretty expensive now. I think as if you buy a new house and they build it into the price of the home, it'll make a lot more sense.
That's,
but building it on top of an existing house.
So I said, like, I live in a very old house, and I would love to get stuff like the Hue lights and like the Nest and things like that, but they're not cheap. And it's like, especially since
some of them,
especially it's not cheap enough for me to buy as a renter. I'll put it that way.
Yeah.
Like if I had my own house, then I would think about getting it, but
although I will say
but you
can
take it with you too.
True,
I mean, it's not like a a heavy install. You're not.
Yeah,
I installed the Nest. It's really easy.
Yeah, that's true.
But so building it onto an existing house is a little bit difficult, and I'm sure there are things you have to think about. Like nowadays, you know, previous eras, you know, you had to think about if there's telephone wiring. Now, none of that matters. You'd prefer to have, you know, coax jacks or Ethernet cables or maybe even USB.
Cat 6. Get some Cat 6 in there.
Yeah.
Ooh,
so the next home is where this is really going to pull out. Because
USB cables just like dangling
I really think. I mean,
why have cables? Just wireless.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean,
go wireless, man.
Lie-Di is something else.
Di-Fi.
But, die.
It's but I think wireless that kills you.
The next generation of homes are going to be the ones where this is really something that can happen. Mm-hmm. The other thing, though, you point out, Josiah, security is huge. And obviously, we're clearly moving towards a more and more digital world, but this shit happens a lot. A lot of places can be hacked, and having some backup, like, for example, I mean, they have physical backups. I think the August lock is one of the bigger home locks, like door locks that you can get, where you can use an app to unlock it. I I think they still have a system where you can have a physical key.
What if your phone dies?
Because they know, yeah, if your phone dies, if the battery cuts out, or I assume it's battery powered. I don't know. Battery powered is power to your house. However that works, you have to have some kind of backup. Mm-hmm. And then security is the other thing. If you go all, electronic digital, if somebody hacks your house, what could they potentially do?
I mean, I guess.
I don't know. Like, actually, so this was something that happened recently with the Nest. So the Nest had a bug.
It's fucking hot in here.
No, so the Nest had a bug, and the way Nest works, they can update over the air, I believe. But it broke the Nest, and it made them shut off. And the problem is, the reason why a lot of people buy Nests is for homes they don't stay at. Actually, right. My brother did this exactly. Their pipes had burst recently, so they bought a Nest so they can control it remotely to make sure it never goes down. The Nest went down. People have, I mean, there weren't any widespread reports of happening, but this could totally happen.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Same thing with their smoke detector.
Yeah, smoke detector had big problems. And the thing is, if the device itself breaks, you obviously can't do an over-the-air update. So you got to go there and change it. But these are just some of the things. Obviously, if you live in the house, not a huge deal.
And
but these are
a lot of these
happen.
Cameras, surveillance cameras and stuff like that, people think, oh, it's so cool. I'll have a little nanny cam or whatever, or be able to watch my cats while I'm at work.
Yeah.
All this crazy stuff. There are websites like search engines that will just let you search, and you can say,
did you see that?
Yeah, yeah. You just say, show me babies in Canada.
Yeah,
you can watch babies.
Wow, there's like, it's apparently really easy to get.
It's
into
so
the
easy
feeds
to hack.
These
I've
videos.
Seen this before. Yeah, and I don't know why. I guess because people have just open.
You could just watch people's cats everywhere.
Yeah.
This isn't the same thing. But you think about, we have more and more cameras in our houses. I remember reading about a lot of schools are giving. devices to students. And there was a report of an IT person watching high school students their MacBooks that they're given.
That pops up. IT.
I mean, obviously, this is just something you have
that
to deal with.
That pops up all the time, like whether it's education or not, this idea of people looking in through your
camera. Yeah, the Xbox, that was a huge deal for the Xbox. Yeah. The camera's always on.
At your house, Rob, how many different angles do you think potentially?
It's funny. I was just looking up,
see.
Expecting a camera to be up in the corner like an old CCTV camera. I don't know, man. I have the webcam. I have my Surface, my phone.
Kinect.
How many?
Both Kinects.
If people are here, there's another that doubles, triples the number of devices.
That
teddy
bear that's in your room that I gave you.
PSN. It's like that the second PS4. Batman movie where he's using everybody's cell phones.
Yeah.
I can triangulate where I am in the house.
Okay,
I didn't mean this
to turn into a scary story, but that is definitely something as you rely on electronics more.
I'm
going to
stop walking around naked now.
I'm going to start walking around naked more.
But anyway, it's cool stuff to think about.
Go to josiahsdong.com.
It's cool stuff to think about. There's, all I want is my floating plant. That's a start.
Yeah.
I'll start with that.
It starts with the floating plant.
I'll start with the floating plant and my Oculus Rift, and we'll.
Is there an app to say how high up your plant will be floating? I want it 15 feet in the air.
Just scare the shit out of Sean. Just like floats over.
Starts talking and has a voice.
Oh, you know, next project I'm going to do is build a magnet big enough so that Rigel can float around.
Oh my gosh. Oh man. You can put it on a drone or something like that. That's not that heavy.
That's what I mean.
Magnets, how do they work?
You make an electromagnet. It's easy.
Okay, well, cool. It's done. Next week, we'll give you updates on Rigel's floating chair.
Next week,
chair.
We won't have a show because we've been building a floating chair.
No, we'll be dead. I'll kill myself somehow doing this. Anyway, thank you so much for listening. You can subscribe to us on the iTunes and Stitcher. You can check us out on YouTube. We need to set an actual name for that. So you can find us on YouTube still by searching for The Commentist. Please share us with your friends. Leave us some comments. You can submit questions and topics to us directly by going to theunwind.audio. Also, be sure to check out The Commentist and all the other great shows on that network. We got Bearded Vegans. We got Kiss the Crest. We have Prayer Hands Emoji. We have a new show coming on, which is a Star Wars-based role-playing game hosted by our good friend Tim out in Canada. Great stuff, funny stuff. We have Our Role to Hit, our D&D podcast, and more to come. So thanks so much for listening.
Tens!
Perfect 10! Yes, sir!
Yes, sir.
I think that was one of the funniest shows we've done.
It's been a while since we had. A bunch of them are you're defending this house and defend from waves. And like, and I'm not sure why all the terrorists decide to send it to this one specific house. Should we all just go at once? Like, nah, nah. And why they need to defend this single house every single time. Like, wasn't anybody realize this house is...
The house has got it going on.
It's in the bar area. There's three stripper poles. Like, they just walk
three?
Around.
You need three of them?
Yeah, that's what they... And then, like, the terrorists really want that.